This is episode 321, dated Monday, January 8th, 2024.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
And welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. My name is Bob Branco. This is episode 321, dated Monday, January 8th, 2024. My name is Bob Branco. And let me introduce the sports spelunkers that are with me today. We start out with the groom, Peter Alchil.
Welcome from Coos Bay, Oregon, where it's actually not raining. We might get an atmospheric river tomorrow and Thursday, but for the moment, it's a relatively dank and gloom, typical Oregon day.
Michael Garrett.
Well, I'm coming from a warm and windy 74 degrees Missouri City, Texas, site of the National College Football Championship this evening. But we're also under a tornado watch until 9 o'clock tonight.
Oh, that's scary. Mm. Well, be safe, Reverend. Don Wardlow.
Oh, hi there from Jersey, where weather-wise nothing has happened. And as to the groom, it should be, how's it go? Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, that's taps, Don.
I know.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, let's hope not. Exactly. You got that right. I speak for myself as well as Peter when I say that, too, by the way. Let's hope for a great marriage like Peter and I have. Anyway, Peter has a great wife, and I have a great wife, too. Luther King is not with us. We mustn't forget your other half, too, Michael. You have a good woman as well. We're all blessed. Luther King has not arrived yet, but I'm sure when he does, he will grace himself with his presence, as he always does. Allow me to thank those people who make it possible for Sports Roundtable to be aired. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. Also, Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place Chatline. Thank you for posting our shows on Reading Door 14. The media outlets. Thank you for airing us when you do, as well as Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, who archives our shows on our website. Go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to Sports Roundtable Podcasts. Click on those, and you will see all of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
And I would also like to extend hellos first to one of our faithful listeners who had a lot to say about our show positively, Becky Frankie Berger from Seattle. Thank you very much for listening to our show. Please continue, and thank you for your support. And speaking of support, I want to thank Trish again for hosting our program and taking the time to commit to it. Thank you so much, Trish. We appreciate you.
My pleasure.
Well, it's football season, and particularly playoff season. It's playoff time in the NFL, so we now know the landscape of the playoffs. So I would like to talk about that a little bit, including some of the upsets. I said before we started the program today, in my opinion, the biggest choker in the broader picture when it came to playoffs was Jacksonville, because they had the division lead most of the season. They had to win yesterday because Pittsburgh pulled off a miracle win. They couldn't do it. Pittsburgh is in. Jacksonville is out. Oh, well. You might see a firing of that head coach. I'm not sure, but man, that was something else yesterday. But the AFC right now, I'm not sure about the order, but I'll at least give you the teams. We have the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Texans, which was a surprise, but they're in, the Browns, the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Steelers. The NFC, and if I make a mistake, correct me. We have the Buccaneers, the 49ers, the Lions, the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Vikings.
No
Vikings. Okay.
No Vikings. We have the Rams.
The Seahawks.
And no Seahawks either.
Okay.
Uh, We do have the Rams and we have the Packers.
Oh yeah, the Rams and Packers, of course. In fact, the Packers are playing Dallas on Saturday. We were talking about that game. And I said, based on the way those teams have been playing lately, it's going to be a toss up. So any comments about the playoffs?
Let me go back to that Jacksonville game. Being here in Houston, the greater Houston area, you know, people here are ecstatic. They're just all over the place. They're just happy, and rightfully so. I mean, this franchise has been terrible for the last several
years.
Mismanagement, all kind of controversial things. But in that game yesterday, with that affected Houston. I think the key person in that game was Derrick Henry.
Was
he had a he had a great game. It's questionable as to whether he's actually going to be with the Titans next year, or someone said he might even retire. But he wanted to go out in a blaze of glory, and my goodness, he had a great game yesterday.
Somebody had the theory. Somebody, hi Luther. Somebody yes. had the theory that Brable might end up in New England, where he used to play.
Keep in mind,
if you're
going to make that trade, it's going to come down to some draft picks and some other stuff.
Yeah,
because you're not just going to be able to just do a, you know, swap of Belichick and Brable. It's going to have to come down to, okay, Brable gets traded to New England. They may have to give you a first and a third, or maybe a second. And then the Titans will have to give something up to New England in return besides Raven. So it can be a long, convoluted process.
According to Adam Schefter, Luther, his name, Brable's name, well, the note said he's not going to meet with media until later in the week.
Well, not surprised. Well,
I don't know what that means, though.
That probably means they're going to do some serious talking behind the scenes before anything else actually comes down, before the media knows anything. This is going to be one of those meetings that's going to be behind closed doors. That's what that means.
I guess my question is, I mean, I know Bill Belichick is one of the best coaches of all time. I get that. But he has been not very good the past two or three years.
Well, here's
no,
why.
No, he hasn't. And he wasn't good ever since
Brady left, essentially.
Here's your simple answer. Belichick, the GM, interfered with Belichick, the head coach. If you're going to give head coach also roster construction power, you have an unmitigated disaster because coaches do not know how to evaluate players. They coach them. There's a huge difference between being an evaluator of players and talent and coaching. Huge difference. And Belichick has sucked as GM.
But that's debatable though, Luther.
No, there's no debate here.
It actually is. Go ahead, Michael.
I think there are a lot of coaches who have an idea of the type of player they need to fit their scheme. And it's a collaboration between the coach and the GM. And because, you know, I can imagine these conversations. Hey, I need this type of guy to fit the scheme. They collaborate. They say, well, where can we find it? They agree upon this type of guy. You go get him.
But here's
what I need. You go get it.
Look at what happened when Bill O'Brien got GM privileges and head coaching privileges in Houston. It was a disaster.
He did
everything possible to sabotage Deshaun Watson to the point of where he basically told Houston, I'm not playing for you no more.
He drove that
guy out.
That's an individual problem. O'Brien is not, you know, he wasn't GM material. He
never was.
As a coach material, he told Jalen Milroe that he shouldn't be playing quarterback.
Well, apparently, yeah. Jalen Milroe can play QB. It's just going to come down to, you know, can they get the right coordinator to balance what he does throwing and running? And I think they finally got that right to a point in the second half of the season. But as we know what happened last week with the bad snap where he had to look at the snap against Michigan and the play got stopped.
I think, Luther, your point about one person being both coach and GM is essentially right. I mean,
it almost never works.
But, you know, when you have a coach and a GM who work together well, it works great.
What we got here in Tennessee right now, we've got a head coach who is proposing, okay? This came out earlier this afternoon, I think from maybe Justina Anderson or somebody else, that basically was proposing that they get a president of football operations to basically drop Rand Carthon from GM and he reports to the president of football operations.
Well, I'm thinking to myself,
if a head coach is proposing that, there's serious lack of communication going on between GM and coach.
Well, Tennessee should be better.
That shouldn't be.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The way it's worked here
in Houston this year is that D'Amico, Ryans, and Nick Caserio have worked together to put.
And that's how it's supposed to work.
Right.
But that's one out of 32 jobs.
We'll see how
they look next year as they move forward with the development of CJ Stroud. What are the pieces will they be able to get around him?
Right.
That's the question.
Right.
Look at the Eagles right now. They're in total disarray. They may lose to Tampa next Monday. And we weren't sitting here. What was it? About a month and a half ago on this very program. Saying how good the Eagles are the second best team in the NFC.
I think the truth of the NFL is.
Who is this, please?
My name is Jonathan.
When we open the show to participants, we will call upon you. We're not ready to do that quite as yet.
But we'll get to you.
We'll get there.
So hold that.
We welcome you.
The Eagles. I am sort of astounded, and the Eagles. You know, people have been talking about their offense, but to me, the main problem with the Eagles is their defense, which has just totally fallen apart. And then they try a new defensive coordinator who was a disaster as the Giants head coach, and they think things are going to get better.
No. Matt Patricia was never the Giants head coach. He was the Lions head coach.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
And then you're thinking he was terrible there, too.
He was a defensive coordinator in New England. Then he was the head coach in Detroit. And then he became an offensive coordinator.
Which was also a disaster.
Which made no sense.
Sorry, I had the wrong team.
The guy you're thinking about is Burrow Cream Bib McAdoo.
No, I'm thinking about this guy, Judge.
He was with the Giants. Another pathetic excuse of a head football coach who should never be getting a head coaching job ever again. But that's beside the point.
So I'm going to propose, Bob, if this is okay, let's see, we haven't done this in a while. Let's get folks, if they have their hands raised to agree with you.
Let's see if Trish has somebody up here. Let's go.
So Trish, you should have Jonathan ready to go. Am I correct? Should.
Well, he can, but we did have a hand raised a while ago.
Let's take care of that person first.
Okay. So the first one is going to be Joe Marks. Go ahead.
Our buddy and pal.
Sorry for his Eagles. Oh my God.
Long time no here. How have you been?
It's 40 degrees in Philadelphia and the sky is falling.
Literally?
It might as well be.
You had a lot of things falling yesterday from the sky, but that's another story.
I'll put it this way. If the Eagles lose next Monday, the sky will definitely be cratering.
There's a lot of kind of questions that I kind of want to get your guys' opinion because on the net, like I feel like I'm in a cocoon from the Philadelphia opinion standpoint and I need the national perspective. So three seasons. Nick Sirianni has taken the Eagles to the playoffs. And all day today, I've heard Nick Sirianni is playing for his coaching career right now in Tampa Bay.
No.
That's my first question that I have for you guys. Is that fair? Number two.
No.
For me, no. I don't think he's fighting for anything. The only thing I think he's fighting for right now is preservation. to think, okay, when we get to this offseason, there will be some coaching changes made because what we have, it's not working. Sean Desai getting demoted from demoted to the booth and basically tanned, basically a quiet shoving for Matt Patricia, who's a good defensive mind, but he came in on short notice. So what did you expect from the defensive side of the ball? And the offensive side of the ball, Brian Johnson, they never changed anything. So, I mean, you tell me, when you have nothing, when you change nothing on the offensive side of the football, you keep thinking you can do the same things, and you demote a defensive coordinator who came from a totally different scheme, and then you go get a guy that was also from another totally different scheme that the Eagles don't play, and you're saying Nick Sirianni's fighting for his job? That's not...
Well, this is Philadelphia sports fan craziness. Because they have to watch them too. And it's ridiculous.
Philadelphia sports fan, they are definitely fanatics, but sometimes they let their fanaticism get in the way of common sense.
And speaking of fanaticism and being a Philadelphia fan, I'm going to humble myself and say, Michael, congratulations to your Cowboys for winning the NFC.
How about to his Texans?
We haven't really done anything yet.
Nope.
Well, that's for sure. That I won't disagree with you about. And the Packers are going to be an interesting matchup.
I'm looking forward to that game.
I
am looking forward to that one.
Is going to be the matchup of the weekend.
I think so.
That I feel like.
And you know what the strangest thing is?
Here's who to watch. Micah Parsons and Aaron Jones.
Oh, good Lord. You know what's so funny? Do you know what's so funny about this matchup? That Matt LaFleur can actually get a quarterback to actually play relevant football and not be stupid with the football. Isn't it amazing how that works? And I will be right back.
I'm sorry. Give me one second, Joe. I think many of us suggested the possibility that the Packers would make the playoffs before the Jets. And look at what happened. Isn't that amazing how that works?
Yeah.
If Aaron Rodgers hadn't gotten injured though.
Yeah, right. But you know, Aaron Rodgers is what, in his late 30s. The chances of him getting injured get higher exponentially by year. He was going to get hurt. I mean, the chances were pretty good. He just got hurt the first four plays. That was unforeseeable. But, you know, I would have been shocked if he'd got through the year unhurt, personally, just because, because he's older. And the Jets' offensive line is terrible.
Peter, about Jalen Hurts' injury and the other injuries. Jalen Hurts does not have a fracture. X-rays were negative on a fracture. And Brown, so the safety Brown is out for the season. He tore his ACL. MetLife it's almost like the vet. It's one of those stadiums in that field. Either, I don't know how you fix it unless you just demolish the whole place and start over. But So AJ Brown, he is questionable, but signs are looking positive for Monday night's game. Devontae Smith is also on that, and Cam Jurgens, the guard, is also questionable. So right now it's a kind of wait and see. Swift just had an illness. He was just under the weather. And here's my biggest gripe, and I want to know, because you guys talk all the time about like coaches and everything like this. I am puzzled. Like, I have been saying the same thing you said, Peter, about this defense, and this defense has been a train wreck next to a dumpster fire, next to a tire fire. It just doesn't make any sense to, you know, switch defensive play callers midstream. Have you guys ever seen anything like that where it actually comes out successful?
I can't think of a situation, but what really puzzles me about the defense, and I just don't have an answer, is that for the first, let's say, half of the season, the defense was pretty good. You know, they were pretty solid, and then they fell apart.
Yeah. And I hate to say it, but it was the Cowboys. The Cowboys and the Niners that kind of shook that defense to the core. But before I go, I wanted to actually give you guys a little bit of a news flash about me. So this coming Wednesday, I will be doing something that's not been heard of in at least Pennsylvania. Philadelphia Eagles are opening up Lincoln Financial Field to me to do mobility training. And then I'm also working with them to kind of work on blind and visually impaired accessibility within the stadium.
Well, that is awesome.
But
that is
very generous of the Philadelphia people. Really?
Yeah. That's great. I am working to get my credentials for my media pass and everything. And so I figured I kind of took a shot in the dark and I'm like, I asked my mobility teacher, I'm like, would you be up for it? And she said, yeah, let's reach out. And didn't really think much of it. And honestly didn't really expect to get much of a return on the investment, but I'm like, okay, they said yes. I'm like, they said yes. I'm like, okay. Yeah, I'm game. Let's do it.
How cool is that? Now,
well, good luck to you on your endeavor, Joe.
Yeah, we'll be pulling for you, Joe.
I use a cane, and so it's going to be about trying to talk to the people there and kind of inform them of like, this is what we need help with, or this is something that I would need help with, and something that I don't. This is where you want to be like helpful, but then you don't want to be like pushy. It's like these are the ebbs and flows. And the Eagles and the Lincoln Financial Field actually has made strides with this in recent years because they have an autism room for people that want to go to the game but don't want to deal with some of the over noise and it affects their autism. So they're really open to accessible means. And within my show that I do, my podcast, we have a sponsor called Philly Sports Trips, and it's a traveling company that goes to away games. And so what I'm trying to do is use that relationship to kind of bridge the gap to with whatever connection they may have to get those tickets in other stadiums and then see if I can't branch into that to kind of make things more accessible. I don't mind if I'm like doing a sports tour, you know, slash accessibility tour, as long as it, you know, kind of makes things a little bit easier and better for someone like all of us to go and enjoy a live event.
Right on. Did you ever go to Franklin Field, Joe?
Yeah, actually.
Because nothing could be less accessible than Franklin Field was. I mean, I went up there, and this is 1990, and it's going to be Penn against Princeton. So I get there, and they say, well, you got to climb up 8 flights of steps to get to the press box. So I get up 8 flights of steps, and I'm in there sitting down and getting my equipment together, and this one, some fellow says, are you Pencil Press? And I said, no, I'm Basement Network Radio. And he said, oh, you can't be in this press box. This is for Pencil Press. Radio's in the other press box. You got to go down the 8 flights of steps, cross the field, and go up another 8 flights of steps. Now, the only way that was made palatable was they loaned me one of the cheerleaders to help me get up the 8 flights of steps.
That was a good time for you, right, Don?
Yes, it was.
I thought so.
The eight flights of stairs.
No taps there, Don.
Especially when they had
Joe. Mario. Joe. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Joe.
Yes.
When you, let us know how things go next week on the show. I don't think we have a guest. So, you know,
right now, we don't have one.
What's that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Keep us posted, Joe. And thank you for your contributions.
No problem.
We have somebody waiting. Jonathan, I think, is next, isn't he, Trish?
No, he's not. He left.
Oh, he did. Okay. Then do we have any other hands raised?
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. Okay.
All right, gentlemen. Changes, let us know.
Hey, Rev, question for you. Cowboys secondary. How do you think they'll hold up with the Packers receivers or tight ends or both on Sunday?
Well, one of my cornerbacks, bad shoulder.
Hey.
And and the safeties are dinged. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. The key will be pressure. How much pressure can we get on Love?
Exactly. And Love doesn't wait around to get rid of the ball. Now, I mean, he had a couple of interesting deep drops where I'm like, why are you taking a deep drop off of a three stepper when you can just get something quick? I understand what he was looking for, but I'm like, dude, you won't be able to do that in the playoffs. I mean, you can get away with it against the Bears, but if you're playing like a San Fran, or if you have to go, I don't know, to Detroit again, if you have to play them again, you might not be able to get away with that.
You know, maybe I'm missing something, but I don't see that Dallas-Green Bay game being much of a game. You know,
it depends on who shows up.
It depends, exactly.
Well, I mean, Dallas,
it all depends on
Dallas
who shows
for
up.
The most part has shown up, you know, except for the Buffalo game and a few others. They've shown up pretty well, especially at home.
Well, I just at home, keep in mind.
It's going to be a much of a game, personally.
Keep in mind, we're back to 0-0. Just because you went 11-5, 12 and whatever in the regular season, that all goes out the window now. Because now everybody's back at the same playing field. The 14 teams that got in here, you're back to square one.
Again, you're right, Luther, of course, but I think Green Bay has been far less consistent than Dallas.
Look at Buffalo-Pittsburgh.
Even during the last four games of the season.
Look at Buffalo-Pittsburgh on Sunday. Look at Buffalo-Pittsburgh this Sunday afternoon. Who would have thought the Steelers would have made the playoffs coming into the last week of the year?
But I don't think that game.
Everything went their way.
Exactly. And Jacksonville, oh, what a disappointment.
Oh, God.
Oh, my Lord.
But my point is, I don't think either the Buffalo-Pittsburgh game or the Dallas-Green Bay game will be especially interesting.
Maybe it will, maybe it won't. I mean, that's why we played them. That's why we don't, why,
right,
that's
exactly why we play the games.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. The game I'm sort of intrigued with is the Detroit-Los Angeles game.
Now that game's going to be fun.
That's going to be interesting.
Matt Stafford, who got traded the day after.
Karma time.
I mean, the day after the Green Bay-LA game in the divisional round. I think it was like 2019 or somewhere in that ballpark. Next day, they traded Goff and I think a first round pick for Stafford and another pick. And I'm like, you're making that move now? And we haven't even finished the season? We haven't even finished postseason yet. You're already making that move? Cause you wanted to get from under a $33 million salary cap that you paid. You paid Jared Goff $33.5 million. And you wanted to get out of it because, oh, he didn't make a throw in the Super Bowl? Maybe you should have thought of that when you gave him that money, because maybe that's who he is as a quarterback. Maybe that is his ceiling.
Well, both quarterbacks are playing.
And we do have another hand raised too.
Ah,
okay. Chris, who is it?
Let's.
Area code 501-974.
All right.
Don't recognize that area code, but
it sounds like a.
You're next.
Teresa from Arkansas.
Oh, Teresa. Oh, okay.
Teresa from Arkansas.
Hadn't heard from you in a second.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Oh boy, this is going to be a. I was looking at that Baltimore-Pittsburgh game Saturday on TV, and my husband said, it's raining. They're going to get pneumonia. And he was thinking of a sister-in-law he used to have who still resides in Baltimore.
I wonder what he would have thought about the – I didn't mean to interrupt you, Teresa, but I'm just thinking right now. I wonder what he would have thought about New England and the Jets yesterday
that
in the snowstorm.
Yeah.
Ugly.
In the snowstorm. We didn't have that in our market, but we did have the Baltimore-Pittsburgh game Saturday. And I texted our son, who's now gotten an interest in football, I guess, from his coworkers on his job. And so he's like, you know, he's a big Ravens fan now. And so I texted him and said, Ravens are leading. At the time, they were ahead. But then, of course, Steelers made a comeback.
In basically a monsoon.
Yeah,
that game was not made for throwing.
And then last night I was semi-following the Sunday night game. And, of course, Miami was ahead for a long time, and then Bills made a comeback.
I'm glad you brought Miami up, because I think Baltimore made the Dolphins look like posers, because they got smoked. And since then, they've not gotten it right. And what concerns me, and what concerns me is they've got to go all the way across country in cold weather.
Yeah.
Something they don't do well in. And I don't like how they've looked and those injuries for the Dolphins on both sides of football. I just don't like how they looked.
I think Miami, the problem with Miami, I mean, Baltimore just made the problem obvious. They didn't beat a good team all year.
And they don't stay patient with the run game either. I mean, if they're running the ball and getting about 7 yards of crap, why are you going away from it? Why? Because you think you have all these cute screens and verses in the middle of the field throws?
But again, the problem with Miami is the problem that, you know, I think Philadelphia, their defense just couldn't stop anybody.
They are in the same boat.
Yeah.
Where Kansas City can run the ball. So can Miami. But I think Kansas City stays patient with their run game a little bit more than Miami does. And if whoever can run the ball in that game is most likely going to win that game. Cause I don't think there's going to be a lot of points to be scored.
Who's the better coach and who's the home field?
Kansas City, Andy Reid.
To me, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Kansas City this year. They've impressed me at all, but they got lucky. They're playing a team that
they're playing. And I'm like, if the Dolphins would have won that game and got the 2 seed, I think they would have done better than what they finished. But I think now that they're having to travel in a short period of time, and the way they've looked almost the last month, this is not a good place to.
Although I will say they beat the Cowboys.
Well, that was on Christmas Eve.
Whatever day, yeah.
I mean, that was Christmas Eve.
I'm back.
Hey,
sorry about that.
Yeah, Chris. I'm coming back at a different number. We got a huge windstorm here, and it knocked me off.
Oh, okay.
But I'm back.
Okay. Anyway, you know, they, you know, with all of our trashing Miami, and I said they didn't beat a good team. They did beat the Cowboys.
They beat the Cowboys, but they almost lost that one.
I thought they were going to.
I did too.
But they didn't.
I'm thinking like, so, I mean, Miami, I really haven't liked them all year. I mean, they've gotten by with a lot of games, and they beat the snot out of Denver, but that was their best win all year.
Well, the problem with their strength, and you've heard me say this all year about Miami, is that what the thing I like about them is their speed, but both Waddle and
Hill
are injured.
And Tyreek Hill had to come off. He had to come off the field yesterday in the last drive.
As he did. And I'm not sure Moser's at full strength.
I don't know either. Sure I haven't heard.
I'm not sure A-Chain is at full strength.
I mean, the Dolphins are just beat up.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to take its toll. It already has. And I think it's only going to get worse. Because look at their defense. Their defense is shredded. They lost Bradley Chubb. They lost Andrew Van Dinkle yesterday. Along with all the other injuries at the yard.
The thing is, Kansas City's offense is nothing. I mean, how many wide receivers will drop passes on that
Saturday? all of them.
All of them, but here's the thing.
All
though.
Of them.
But here's the thing, I mean, though.
It really is sad.
But here's the thing, though. Who put this roster together? That's what you gotta look at. Sometimes teams need to understand what their best players need. And I think this year they thought, oh, we'll just keep Kadarius Toney. Oh, we'll get Nicole Hardman, who hasn't been on the field in almost 2 months. He's one of their X factors. And what you have is Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice. And then after that, who else? Because it's a total drop off after those two.
Okay. I mean, the game they played against Cincinnati, you know, their defense totally dominated Cincinnati in the second half, but they couldn't get anything but field goals.
But look, when you're playing a team like Cincinnati, if that's all they give you, guess what? You're taking it.
Oh, they won the game, but you know what I'm trying to say. You know,
I understand what you're saying, but
their offense was not fabulous.
It's not fabulous.
Well, that's the strength of their team, the Kansas City team.
It doesn't have, I mean, look at what they did against the Chargers yesterday. They didn't
have
to score.
Without a full complement of receivers to help Mahomes out, I think they've got an injury to one of their offensive linemen.
Yeah.
But without a full complement of receivers, you know, to help him out and the ability to run the ball.
Well, luckily they can do that.
They can, but it's not helping him enough. You know?
No, it's not.
No.
I mean, the defense has carried the Chiefs all year.
And that's what's going to, and, yes. that, and,
that's the that,
and yes. guess what? If you have a good enough defense, you can upset offenses. You can do that.
Chris, did you say something? No. Okay.
No.
I hear somebody's stuff in the background. I don't know whose it is, but.
So, the other game I think that's going to be really interesting. Is the Browns Houston game.
First game of the day.
First game of the day. And the thing is, the game's in Houston. If the game was in Cleveland, I wouldn't be nearly.
I still think Cleveland defensively can, you know, shut down that offense. But what concerns me is I think the point you were going to make is the Browns offense.
Exactly.
Are they going to be able to do enough to offset what the Browns defense will probably do against CJ Stroud? Because CJ Stroud didn't play in the first meeting either.
Exactly. That's what I was going to point out. He didn't play in that game.
Nope.
And
I think it was coming off that. Wasn't that the concussion? I think. Yeah.
That was a concussion.
Yep, yeah. That's what I thought.
Now the thing you got to look at is can Nico Collins have as much success as he had in this weekend's game?
I want to see what they're running backs with Singletary and Pierce. Can that offensive line create some holes where they can, where
Singletary,
the Texans offense?
Singletary is the running back. They're not letting him run from scrimmage much.
What happened there? Because it just felt like, there's been a precipitous drop on Damian Pierce, and I don't know what happened, because he just felt like he was on the rocket ship.
I'm not sure, because every time they let him run, to spell Singletary, he was ineffective. Mm-hmm. So they decided to give him another task. They put him back as the kickoff return guy, not the punt return guy.
A dude that ain't gonna catch a kick ever.
But what happens though, and it's not a position you really want to have to do all the time, because that means the other team is scoring on you.
Exactly.
But when he does get a chance to return kickoff, he's pretty good at it.
But he cannot run from
scrimmage effectively.
Well, yeah, when you're doing a kickoff, having to, you know, deal with your blocking, hoping for you don't get smoked before you get to the 20, and then you're back there in the backfield as a lead back. Yeah.
So I guess
Singletary.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Michael.
I was just going to say Singletary has really done well. He runs hard. And you know, he has really done well. He's been a great compliment to Stroud, and he's blocked well for Stroud.
And he was a good pass catcher when he was with the Bills too. So that adds a little bit of an element that I don't think they had at the beginning of the year.
Well, go ahead, Bob. Dalton Schultz.
Oh, Dalton Schultz, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess my thing with Cleveland is I just don't trust Flacco.
I don't either.
I just don't trust him. When it comes down to it, I mean, I know he's played really, really well, but now that you have really good teams and coaches who can scheme better, I just don't think he's going to last very long.
I would not be shocked if D'Amico Ryans pulls off. I wouldn't be shocked if D'Amico Ryans gets at least one more game and they got to go to ball. I wouldn't be shocked if they got to go to Baltimore. Now, I don't know if they'll win that game.
I'd love to see Cleveland Baltimore game. I'd love to see Cleveland win that game.
But again, like we discussed, do we trust Flacco enough to not make a boneheaded mistake with Cleveland's offense?
I think
we're
starting to.
That's the question.
I do want to switch gears at this point, because there's a championship game tonight in college football. I'd like to get your analysis of that. What do you think is going to happen?
Michigan defense against Michael Penix.
Here's
a simple breakdown here. Can Washington get Michigan off the field? Because if they're going to be in this game, Washington's defense is going to have to figure out a way to stop Blake Corum and the running game. Because if you let Blake Corum go nuts, that's going to allow J.J. McCarthy to get out on the edge, on the periphery of the perimeter, dance around, make two or three plays to Romeo Wilson and others, unlike Michael Penix, who has a guy named Roma Dunce. If Washington's going to have to drop back to throw and try to hit Roma Dunce on a couple of deep slants, they're going to get picked off. And most likely in Michigan secondary, and Jesse Minter, who's our D coordinator, will dial up some exotic stuff. Don't be shocked by that. Some stuff that Michael Penix hasn't seen.
The thing that really shocked me about the Michigan-Alabama game was how Michigan just dominated the
That's what I think it's going to come down to.
That's what I think so too.
I think Michigan is going to basically, if Washington cannot get off the field, and this is the big key, if Washington cannot get off the field on third downs, it's going to be a long night for them. I don't care what they do offensively. Because if Michigan can keep Washington's offense on the bench for 6, 7, 8 minute scoring drives, by the time you get to the fourth quarter, there ain't going to be enough time left. And I think that's the game Michigan wants to play. They don't mind playing mud pit rock fight football because that's what they want to do. They want to beat you up, and that's what they're going to do. If they can get control of the game, that's what they're going to do.
I have to say, Washington was disappointing to me. I mean, I'm a Pac-12 guy now until Pac-12 goes into the dustbin of history. But, you know, Washington just played amazingly well all year. But when they played Texas, they had this.
They almost
blew.
If it wasn't for an injury and time running off the clock because of it, I think Washington wins that game. I think Texas wins that game. If Texas doesn't run out of time. I think that's the only thing that kept Texas from playing Michigan in the national championship game.
I thought about you, Michael, during that game. Because
no kidding. I had the Texas feed on the varsity up, and I'm like, wow, that close.
Yeah. We had four plays in 15 seconds, and we just couldn't.
Sark, what was it? The day after in his post-game presser said it's a little tricky because you have to go to the end zone or you had to use a sideline play, but they had no timeouts. So if they would have gone to the sideline, they would have been tackled in bounds. The clock would have ran out anyway. So they had to figure out a way to stop the clock. And the only way they could stop the clock was throwing it into the end zone and hoping the receiver could go get it.
I think Michigan will win the game tonight.
I think they will too.
But I think I always say this. I think good defenses almost always beat good offenses.
Almost 90% of the time. If you have a good enough defense and you can walk and you can play that 3-3-5 or with a 4-man front and you can get pressure with just that, 99% of the time you're going to beat the snot out of some folks.
I think the defense for Michigan will be the deciding factor. Because
I think so too.
The defense.
I think they're going to win the weak spot. I think Michigan will win the turnover battle plus two. I think there's going to be a fumble somewhere and a pick somewhere.
Washington's defense, having watched them fairly closely the second half of the year, their defense did get better. I don't think it's nearly good enough.
But here's the thing though. I know what you're saying, Pete, but my key for them is Washington's offense must keep up with Michigan because if they cannot, it's going to be a runaway and hide, kind of like last year's national championship game. Well, TCU and Georgia.
I don't see it being that bad.
Well, I don't either,
Penix can, he's too mobile, you know, and he has more than one receiver And Dylan, what is his name? The running back.
Dylan Johnson.
Yeah, he's very Johnson, he's very versatile.
He's got Aroma Dulce at the other receiver, and I think he's got the
and the other receiver. So he's got
Wilson,
and he used the tight end a lot.
No, the other receiver is Polk that they have. Plus that tight end you mentioned, yeah. So they've got some weapons, but again, if Washington's offense can't be a factor in this game, it really won't matter what they do. Because if Washington's defense on the field 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes at a time, Washington's not going to have enough time.
Yeah, you make them one dimensional. You make them one dimensional. Michigan's pass rush.
Jesse Minter, their defensive coordinator, and Jim Mabar are going to have a field day.
Now, the more interesting question for me, or at least an interesting question, especially if Michigan wins, will Harbaugh be in Michigan next year?
I think that's a possibility. He could be the Chargers head coach next year after this game. I think that's a possibility. He could even be the Chargers coach.
Tennessee?
No, not the Titans. No. I think it's either the Chargers, the Panthers, and maybe one other team that I'm not seeing, but I could see Chargers.
I wouldn't take the Panthers. I wouldn't take the Panthers, John.
No, but the Chargers, definitely. Chargers, definitely. Because they already have a franchise quarterback. They just need to figure out a way to get more out of it.
Right, right.
I think Jim Harbaugh can get something out of Herbert. If they, you know.
He's been linked to them.
I think that's where he's going to go. And I think he might be the guy that, how can I say it, will get more control on how the roster is supposed to look. Unless they find a GM that Jim Harbaugh wants to work with. And that's the $50,000 question. Can they find a GM that will work with Herbert, with the Chargers? I don't know.
My other reaction to this game, I really do admire the Michigan players. You know, they had to play, what, 3 or 4 games? Or actually,
no, try half the season.
Well, right, but I'm thinking.
They played the first 3 games and the last 3 games.
The first 3 games don't count because they're
playing. No, because they were piss-ups. I mean, they were East Carolina and a couple of other. And
but the last 3 do count, and I was sure Michigan would lose one of those games.
Yeah, Ohio State, the Big Ten champion, and
Penn State, they had to play
Penn State.
Somebody else, Maryland.
And Alabama.
Harbaugh coached during the Alabama game, but the last
3. Yeah, he coached in the Big Ten championship game and the CFP.
You know what's messed up about that?
Hold on, what does that say about the interim coach there?
Josh Gattis, the offensive coordinator, and the other guy that they had? Yeah, they did just fine.
Go ahead,
They kept the boat afloat while he was out.
I was really impressed with that whole, as much as they may have cheated, and we're going to find out more about
We'll find that out later in the months to come.
That's why I think Harbaugh's going to go because.
Oh, I think so too. Before the smoke really comes to a fire. I think so.
Go ahead, Don.
Go.
Yeah. What's screwy about this game is now our listeners are probably hearing it after the fact, but as we took the air, it was 5 o'clock Eastern time.
Yep.
The game is at 7:30 Eastern.
Yep.
The Washington pregame started at 3:30 Eastern.
Yep. And Michigan's pregame started at 4.
I was going to say either 4 or 4:30.
It was right at 4 o'clock.
I mean, how in the world can you do either a 3.5 or a 4-hour pregame and have anything left?
Here's the kicker.
It's like I emailed you, Don. The New England Patriots have 3 and 4 hour pregame and 3 and 4 hour postgame shows every week.
I think they've done 3, but I think Alabama does 3. There's a few Learfield schools that have pregames that go at least 3 hours.
Oh, Missouri does.
Missouri goes 2.
No, Missouri, but their pregame I think is 3.
Is it 3?
Unless
it's the local pregame show and then they join Learfield, because I know South Dakota.
I think you're right, Luther. But they do have a local show an hour before they go on to Learfield.
And check this out though, guys. North Dakota State has almost 8 to 9 hours of coverage with 1 or 2 hours of it on the network through Learfield. The rest of it is on their flagship station. But I'm like,
yeah, how did that turn out? Did they win the title?
No, North Dakota State got knocked out by Montana in double overtime.
No, South Dakota scored a touchdown earlier in the game. That's the
experience. I forgot who won the championship yesterday for the FBS, for the FCS.
North Dakota State has been, they've been in the mix, the championship.
Yeah, they have.
I know there's money in those playoffs, I mean those pre-games. I've sold pre-games and I've sold post-games, and because of the fact that there is money in it, I've had to do pre-games and post-games.
But oh, sure.
The longest I ever had to do was 45 minutes, you know, which is almost normal. You know, I mean, an hour is the longest I ever listened to, and that was for my beloved UConn Huskies when they were really relevant, which they're not going to be this year after their latest injury.
Well, their male team is terrific.
Well, that's not who I'm talking about.
I know.
There's no team on earth going to make me listen to a 3 or 4 hour pregame.
I'm sitting there I looked on the Varsity app and I'm thinking like, they've done these pregame shows like this all year long, from regular season to postseason. Now I wonder how much of this
shows in New England.
I wonder, because I know the UK Sports Network, they do 90 minutes. They do a full hour and a half before tip off.
I remember when I first moved down to Washington and in New York back then, when I moved down in the late 90s, in New York back then, the Giants and Jet pregame were 2 hours. They started 2 hours before. And I think there was a 1 hour or 2 hour post game show. When I moved down to Washington, they were playing Dallas. I remember this, and the game started at 1 o'clock. And so I turned on the sports station down there, expecting to get your usual, typical national feed.
Right.
And they started the pregame. The Redskins did back then. They were called the Redskins at 9 o'clock. They had a 4 hour pregame show.
That's insane.
Crazy.
I mean, now I can understand if it's like a big event, like the Stanley Cup final or whatever on TV.
Or the Super Bowl.
Or the Super Bowl, because that's almost an all day event. That's 5 or 6 hours. Because on TV, they'll start it like at noon and they'll kick it off at 5:40. That's a full day before you even get to kick off.
Yeah, exactly.
And Westwood One.
A lot of pro teams do that though. They have those
our local pregame show down here.
Money behind it.
Our local pregame show down here is 2 hours of local, an hour for network, and then play by play, and then you go local postgame for almost local network pregame postgame for an hour, and then about an hour and a half before you go to Sunday Night Football. And I'm like, that's nuts.
Well, there obviously is money behind it, otherwise they wouldn't do it. What I do for the Super Bowl is I set my clock. When I was in New York, I set the clock for 6:38 p.m. That's when the game started. Mm-hmm. I set an alarm clock and wake up and watch the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
It's the only way I could do it. And now, of course, in here, now that I'm in Oregon, it's going to start at 3:38 or 3:40.
3:40. Maybe if you're lucky, about 42. You're lucky. Yeah. Depending on how long they do the pregame intros and the national anthem and all that good jazz and, all the pomp and circumstance that go on before that.
Right. But at least you missed the ridiculousness of the pregame show. You might
have 5.5 hours of stuff.
Yeah. And while we're at it, usually the miserable performance of the national anthem.
Before we close, there was some breaking news today on a totally different topic. Guess who the St. Louis Cardinals in baseball hired?
I saw that on my MLB app.
As an advisor to the president of baseball operations.
I haven't heard this.
Who is this?
Chaim Bloom.
Oh, God. Yes. Here's what I'm thinking to myself. I'm like, what in the world? Did we bring a mole to infiltrate one of the best baseball franchises in all of sports?
And you notice bring that guy? But Luther, he's not getting a president's job anymore. He's back to what he was at Tampa Bay.
Well, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a bad thing. We'll see.
Did I hear that right? That Bloom is now some baseball.
Bloom is now
assistant to the president of baseball ops in St. Louis.
So at least he has a job.
You left just in time, Peter.
Does that mean the blue is come off the rose?
Yes, it already. Look, Pete, that bloom came off the rose when he got canned.
I know.
That bloom went bye-bye before he even, you know, before
that,
he
that
even
was meant to be a joke. But
before he,
case,
before he could even before he could even pack his suitcase.
Every rose has its thorns or something.
And yeah, Teoscar, exactly. And Teoscar Hernandez. I wish Mitch was here. Teoscar Hernandez. 1 year, $23 million to be a Dodger.
Yeah.
They're really opening the purse strings.
All I can say is if the Dodgers don't win the World Series in the next couple of years,
Dave Roberts is going to get fired.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen, but we'll know.
I mean, look, I'm seeing something about this other Japanese guy. There's a team that's really hot and heavy on him. They didn't say what team, though. But there's like another like.
What Japanese guy is this?
I forgot what his name was, but it's
Minota or Minota.
I think it's Manunga or Manaya or
Yamamoto,
something.
Yamamoto. He's a Dodger.
No, not Yamamoto, him. There's another one.
There's somebody else.
It's another one.
Not really. That's what I'm hearing is we didn't come up with the numbers that Yamamoto had.
He's probably not going to get that. He may be a little bit below that, but I don't know
this
if that's...
This guy's more like a Cody Senga or...
Yeah, Kodai Senga.
Or that other guy, Daisuke
Matsuzaka.
He's like one of those guys.
Mm-hmm. And Kodai Senga with the Mets, every time he gets a strikeout, they use the old Sonic the Hedgehog when they had from Sega Genesis when the game turned on. That's what they use for every strikeout for him. I'm like, oh man, really?
You're right about the Dodgers, though, because they're pouring it all on, man. They're like, drinking.
I mean, they're going for broke. But here's what I wonder, though. At what point does the luxury tax catch up to the Dodgers, though? Because they've
look what they did with Ohtani. They're deferring that.
They're doing the same thing with Teoscar. 2/3 of that is deferred.
Deferred. There you go. Boy, all the money this is all going to come back to bite them down the line.
All I can say is remember Bobby Bonilla, who's still getting paid
I think there's like 11 more years of that foolishness to go.
2035.
I think they got like 11 more years of that foolishness to go.
You know it.
Which is silly. Kind of like what we discussed about, you know, who was that pitcher that we talked about a few seconds ago? Ohtani. How good is he going to be? And, you know, if he's not worth every penny that he's getting.
Not at first.
How much of that will, you know, him and his agent agree to give back if, let's say, he doesn't pan out like everybody hopes he does? Or how much would he ask to be paid?
Yeah, I'm sure they have some sort of an agreement.
It would take
two lawyers to read that contract, I'm telling you.
Try more than two, Mikey.
We are out of time, gentlemen. But thanks again for another great sports roundtable. We'll see what happens with Michigan-Washington tonight. See what happens with the first round of the football playoffs in the NFL. Thanks, everybody, and go safe with God's abundant blessings. Thank you, Trish.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
Have a great week. I'm Bob Franco. Bye.
Bye, everybody.